Okay, you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 Radio for Open Ears. This is the new installment of Reading is Functamental. That is a monthly show that I do here, and it's also a podcast where I talk to people who write books about music. Sometimes they're famous musicians like Phil Manzanera, Dave Mason, or Robert Hitchcock. Sometimes they're the family thereof, which we will get into right away. My name is Sal Cataldi. I am the host of the show. I'm a local musician. I play in a couple of bands. Spaghetti Eastern Music is my main project. I also play in a band called Space Heater, a poetry project with a guy from Alaska called Vapor Vespers, and the Harry Karaoke Trio of Doom with Doug Hitchcock from Kansas City. And I also write about music for places like Pop Matters, the New York Times, and also for New York State Music.com, where I did a review of a book by the woman who is going to be my guest today. That is Moon Zappa. That is the eldest child of Frank N. Gail Zappa. We're going to hear a lot about Gail. The book is called Earth to Moon, and it is really a memoir of her sort of dysfunctional childhood, and also really a story of survival. It's really like almost a personal how-to self-help book where she talked about her own growth. Again, she came to fame with her dad on the tune Valley Girl. She was an MTV and VH1 VJ. She's been an actress. She's been a novelist. She's a tea entrepreneur, and she's a yogi. She is actually going to be in our area at the Golden Notebook on October 12th, I believe, speaking about this book. And before we get into this interview, at the top of the show, you heard a song called A Scanner Darkly. That's an instrumental by myself, Spaghetti Eastern Music, followed by a little great guitar work from Frank Zappa from the album Burnt Weenie Sandwich. That is my favorite. And Zoom Moon actually does tell us how to make a burnt weenie sandwich, which was a Frank ate all the time. And a song called Mom and Dad from one of his best albums. But without any further ado, here we go. Moon Zappa. Okay, we are here with Moon Zappa. I have to say, I am a big fan of your father's music, and I'm a big fan of you. I mean, I think this book is really fantastic. It's I've reviewed a bunch of albums of his, the Alex Winters documentary. I even wrote a feature on his career in advertising, his jingles and everything. And you're sort of cut from the same rug. You're a very hardworking person. You're sort of a Renaissance person, author, actress, entrepreneur, spiritualist. You have a great sense of humor. And you've done a great job promoting this book. It's a fantastic book. It is called Earth to Moon. I recommend everybody go out and get it. I wrote an earlier print interview, which I don't know if you had the chance to see, but I kind of compared it to Mommy Dearest in a way.
That's Christina. And thank you so much for that warm, description of me in the book. I appreciate all of that. Thank you.
No. I've been a big fan for a long time, but I mean, your attitude, and it really does come through in the writing. I said it was kind of a little like Mommy Dearest, minus obviously the coat hangers and a little bit of a Daddy Dearest thing.
My friend originally had said you should call it Mommy Weirdest, and that was a title that I was kicking around very briefly.
Not bad. So this is let's talk about actually how you first got into writing. I had been familiar with your writing. I think in 2001 you had a novel out, America the Beautiful. So you've been writing, and really you do have your parents to thank for your writing, because they would gift you a journal every year. So let's hear about like how you got started writing and you know how you've managed to do it through your life.
Well, so many things converged to kind of catapult me in this direction. Early on, both Frank and Gail, who I was introduced to at birth, were word people. They had a fascination with language. Frank loved to invent names for things. They had everything from like Gream was the day between Thursday and Friday.
Oh, wow.
They made up all kinds of wild stuff, and Gail would also read to all of us and do all the voices of all the characters. And so early on, I was interested in sound, and of course the music was being piped in through the house, and so sound and storytelling was fascinating to me. And eventually I became interested in acting thanks to watching Sonny and Cher and Carol Burnett
Yes.
on TV growing up. And then once I got into acting and didn't feel like I had much control over my getting hired, essentially, I thought, oh, it would be easier to be a writer because then I could still act. I'm all the characters. I'm the producer. I'm the set designer. I'm the director. I'm all the things, the costume designer. And then I ended up working for Ray Gun magazine.
I remember
It
them.
was a music magazine, and I was a music journalist, and I had a funny little kind of like a think piece, kind of a column that was a humorous column. And so that's kind of like where the writing originally began. And then I just kept I was just obsessed with storytelling and the mastery of storytelling and all the ways in which you tell a story.
Well, people should know. I mean, if you're a fan of Frank's music, as I am, and I'm wearing my stylistic shirt today, but I do have a burnt weenie sandwich T-shirt and a lumpy gravy. But I digress. But again, this is really a story about you. It's a story about survival of a sort of chaotic childhood and self-realization, like your journey to kind of make peace with this and to move on. And you've had a lot of obstacles in your life outside of the family. But I think a lot of people are going to want to start with talking about your father, which we'll kind of do a little bit. And he was a self-absorbed genius, as we all know. And it seemed like you had such a great respect for him. And the time with him was precious and short and rare. So if you want to tell us a little bit about the role he played and how you had a
So one of the things that I wanted to create for the reader, and to me it reads like science fiction, and it could be anybody's family. I think it just so happens that the cast are maybe people you would know from film and music and television that I'm interacting with, and so it's these are the places where I learn my lessons in these little heightened situations. But we all, I think, ultimately are learning some of these same things. But my father, he was the funniest person I knew. He was the most prolific person I knew. He made you feel like you were the most special person. I used to say he was like having Jesus and Spock for a father. And so I wanted to take the reader on the journey of understanding, again, is genius worth the collateral damage? But also to
Exactly.
talk about what it's like to try to create an identity when there's no one mirroring anything back to you about yourself. Because it's just when you're in a house like that, all the arrows point to the top of the pyramid. And I really took my name literally, that I was the moon, just there to reflect the light of my father, the sun. And so the book is a journey of saying, no, I actually do have light of my own. So.
Well, and the unit was kind of cute. I didn't know that. The unit was actually it's actually kind of wholesome, that he came up with the name unit because you were, I guess, the beginning of what became the
I was the
family unit.
firstborn, and we became a family unit. So I was just obsessed with family from the get-go. And again, I think when you are a person who is missing some key ingredients, they become extremely you become an expert in what's special and what's precious. And so family and sitting down for a meal and getting a hug when you're sad and having soup when you're sick, these are the kinds of things I wish that I could experience. And
It seemed like
whereas,
a real quest for sort of a stability that, is this a very traditional a trad family. But again, with your father, he was for those who don't know, he was an aggressively touring musician. So he was on the road 9 months a year. And then when he wasn't on the road, as you say in the book, he would get up at 5 p.m. and work through the night. You'd hear the music coming up. And then, this gets to actually how you sort of first became known, broadly was via the song Valley Girl. And if you want to maybe tell people who don't know how that came about as it relates to
Yeah,
this.
so when I was 13, I had 13 years to notice that my father liked being in the studio more than he liked sitting around with us. And so I thought, aha, if I want to spend time with him, I'm going to have to try to figure out a way to work with him. So I slid a note under his studio door, and I basically just said, I think we should work together. Maybe I could do that funny voice you like. that makes you laugh. Because at that time I was going to school
Right.
as a middle schooler in the San Fernando Valley, and I was just fascinated again by this lyrical, musical way that these girls spoke, and I would do it at home, and he thought it was really funny. And so one night he woke me up on a school night, and you don't argue and say, "Can you come back when I'm awake?" You
Right.
just grab the moment that you get.
That was his 11 a.m.
Exactly,
Right. Yeah.
exactly. So I went to the studio, and he just asked me to improvise a bunch of topics. He'd throw out an idea, talk about the cat box, talk about what it's like at school, throw in tubular. He would just kind of give me these prompts, and then I would just improvise. And that's all it was for me. It was just time with my father. And then later, he put it on this album, and then that song became the breakout song on that album. And so none of that was any of my goal. It was just time
Right.
with my father that then became this this runaway train that just had a
Yeah.
life of its own.
Well, that's
And
what ultimately led to your really, I guess, in a way, led to your acting career. Although you did run away as a child. So let's talk about last thing with your father is really like Picasso. You talk about genius, and you could probably talk to all the Picasso children, and they'd have the same thing. It's the guy is self-absorbed with his work, and he's a bit of a horn dog, and the extramarital affairs and that sex life, which kind of was sort of, it did a very good job of on the PR front in the 80s, and not, you're just like, oh, family man, always posing with the picture of you kids. But that really did, that was the main issue that really impacted your mother, you say,
yeah, I
correct?
mean, Gail had a public face of Zen, and the messaging was, when you love someone, you love all parts of them. You accept every bit of who they are. And
Right.
but privately, she was not okay with what he was doing. And so
Right.
I would get the bulk of her wrath about it. She didn't have friends. She didn't go to a therapist. We had a family Ouija board, and we'd see psychics and things like this. And so there wasn't great tools for regulation and for self-care. That just wasn't what was around at that time. So, and the message I got as a daughter was, first of all, I didn't like how we treated Gail. So then I had this conflicting thing of, like, I love this dad, but I don't like what he does to Gail. And then I got the message that I was worth less than the person who meant nothing to him that he was spending his time with. And so
Right.
it was a lot to navigate. And I think my brothers probably got a different message about, like, you can have all the ladies you want. This is a good
Right.
time if you keep taking this path. But it's completely different to be a daughter in that house.
Yeah. Well, again, there are some, I mean, I've read some things. I believe there was a book written by a woman about saying she lived under the piano in the studio in the basement. I mean, it wasn't just like, I mean, although it was mainly on the road, and then you also do reference in the book that he did asked for a divorce a couple of times, which obviously did not come about. But really, this book mainly it's about you coming to, it's a classic book, mainly coming to issues, mother issues. You and the mother issues are the primary thing. You have some very sweet things about your time with your dad when he was gifting you his 45 collection, when you were at the zoo and he made you the coin,
Moon
Moon is
is
beautiful.
beautiful.
Moon
The
is beautiful. So those are very nice moments. Now you say your mother actually was into a lot of things like UFOs and sort of passed on to some point an interest in witchcraft. So you can tell
yeah, what
us.
was weird about writing the book was when I went back and I was looking at everything. I was trying to climb into everybody's skin and just kind of trying to see what they might have been experiencing at that time. I realized that I assumed that Frank was on board with all the things that Gail did when Frank was away. I
Right.
just made that leap in my head, but I don't know if he ever even knew how different life was when he wasn't there. There was no way to verify that. I took Gail's word for everything, because you don't think your mother's going to lie to you or betray you or not look out for you. And so
Right.
there was just the family. Originally, I had hoped that all of us would be able to tell this story. When Gail was alive, I had proposed to her that we all do a family memoir because I've never seen anything like that. And I thought it'd be amazing if we could all just kind of like have this linear narrative where we all like pop in a favorite something, an event, and kind of tell it in all these different from all these different angles. But that didn't happen. And so, but had I written the book before Gail died, it would have just been like, these are all the fun things about Zappa family values or something like this. And as a result of this pretty devastating betrayal that happens during her illness,
The final
I
perfect chess move. Perfect
it's,
mistake.
it's I mean it's flawless. And it just made me have to rethink absolutely everything I knew as that I trusted. I had to redefine family. I had to redefine identity. I had to redefine safety. All of it. I just had to just rebuild everything from the ground up.
Well, before people, get the idea that this is sort of, a mommy dearest syndrome, you do have a, have an admiration for your mother, for her strength, so it's a very conflicted, sort of presentation, which is an actually very human and honest book, which is why the book is so good. It's just not one directional. You do kind of circle back and say, well, maybe, and then you also put out that you think, if I'm correct, you think to some degree your dad might have been Aspergery in terms of
I think
emotions,
there probably
or
was a diagnosis there because as a kid, I always felt like I better make sure he gets to the bus stop. It was like that kind of a feeling. But I understood that he had extreme intelligence in this one area, but he also was missing social cues. He was quite awkward when you tried to have a real conversation. He'd make funny voices, do his moo-ah thing, and then he went to humor. It was like earnestness and feelings were among some of the worst things you could be besides Republican or part of the military realm. There, it was just it was not. We were the house where you could curse as much as you wanted, but if you try to have a direct conversation about a real thing, it was time is money, and you just got to keep it moving. So.
And then you actually did get kind of looped back into the house when his illness, when he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So you actually did come in and take care of him. And then there's an issue in the book where your mother asked you to, like any good genius, Frank did not have health insurance. I mean, it's kind of uncon, some of this stuff was just, as a father, I'm a musician on the side, I was a business person. It just blows my mind that a guy wouldn't, have
Right. So you go
health insurance.
genius with no health insurance. How is that a genius? Or genius and this much money in debt. How is that a genius? But we're just areas that just were culled and just and it fed something else. And so I mean that's the thing. I wanted to give the reader all of those complexities and have them feel I feel this, but I'm also feeling this opposing thing. And I again I tried to I worked it like it was a cold case and going, did I see this coming? Were there signs early on? And so
How
just
and how much did you bounce off your siblings to say, like, am I remembering this correctly? Is this
nothing.
nothing? Okay, so it
No,
was
because I
really
had been made.
by that time you were all siloed
Yeah, estranged,
due
exactly.
to yeah well I'm trying to due to Gail's little end game there. Let's talk about you and like some of the things that people may not know about you. So you go from Valley Girl. And then you become an actress, and you have your first kiss with, is that true, with Eric Estrada
Yeah, it
of
was
Chips?
unexpected. He was, I think it was just he was going for gallantry, and he did like a very exotic kind of a romantic
Oh, the
dip
dip,
to
yes.
welcome me to the show to be a cast member briefly on the show Chips, and it was like, oh, that was done. That's it. A much older man
And then
did
you obviously you had your time at like MTV and VH1, and
yeah.
then you actually were, it's actually a very sort of interesting and kind of a not in not a not a a sort of a common story about the television show that you guys did, Normal Life, how it sort of got morphed from the original concept and
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is when you're relying on other people to tell your story and they didn't have your experiences, you're going to get a lot wrong. And so the story that we had pitched was really more of a Addams Family story. And Our goal was to kind of share what the best of our family, but they didn't know how to kind of tweak that and make it and tell that story. They ended up telling a different story, and that was a very frustrating
And that
experience.
lasted eight weeks, right? 8 weeks, eight
Yeah,
episodes. Oh, you know.
but the amazing thing was I did make a lifelong mentor out of that experience when I was told I had to go see an acting coach to teach me
Oh,
to act
right. Yes.
myself.
Man.
I was so mad.
Yeah. Well, you have like in the book of your career. I mean, what are you again? Like we said, you've done several different things with a lot of gusto. So what is your favorite part, creative function, and where do you want to go? Where are
I
you
mean,
focusing
I think
now?
we were raised to just be hustlers. If this thing
Right.
isn't working, go try this thing. If this thing isn't working, like, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, in Frank's case, he just got incredibly lucky because he was able to do his own art form exactly the way he wanted and still be able to make a decent living. And that's extremely rare. And that's something that you can, it's arbitrary. You can do as much as you can do, but you're not in charge of how somebody else parts with a dollar in your
Right.
direction. So
Well, how much of yourself now? Well, like, what are your activities now? Obviously, you've written this book. I don't know
Yeah, I
you,
mean, I'm a
and I know
full-time
you're an
writer.
entrepreneur. You're
Yeah, I'm a
tea.
full-time writer and I have a tea company called Moon Unit Tea, and so it's available on my website. I tea's my happy place, and that's something that I talk about in the book, just about how that was one way that I would ground into myself and feel connected to me, and so that's something that I feel very passionately about. But and I love storytelling. I love helping people with their dreams and helping them go past their own limitations as well.
Well, how has your how has the way you were raised impacted your own role as a parent? And you do tell a pretty, horrifying story about the illness of your daughter when she was 3 years old. It was terrible, but luckily she came out of it. So, did it affect you, and how did it and re-engineer the way you're parenting?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you come from emotional and psychological scarring, it's very impactful. And so I think anybody who didn't like something about their childhood tries not to repeat it as an
Right.
adult, whether it's towards their own child or towards themselves or whatever it is in the world. So yeah, I tried to take the best of what I had in my family, like anybody would, and not repeat I basically became the parent I wished I would have had.
Right.
And now my kid has complaints of her own, but ultimately, that process was incredibly important in terms of my healing because I got to see how easy it is to love somebody and how easy it is to not hurt their feelings and how easy it is to be comforting and be collaborative and say sorry when you make a mistake and repair a rupture and all these things that didn't happen in my upbringing. And again, when Gail did what she did, I knew that I could become a cautionary tale about dissolving under the worst situation. But partly because I'm a parent and partly because I'm just tenacious as hell, I refuse to let those patterns carry on. And I think that that's another universal aspect of the story. If there's anybody that says this ends with me, I'm not moving these patterns forward, then I
Right.
hope it's like a balm and an engine on your like that you get renewed endurance and enthusiasm for saying, love gets to win.
Yeah, well, last thing I want to talk about is sort of the status of you and your siblings at the moment. It was because of what your mother you could I direct people to the book to get into the nitty-gritty of the mother being a little deceptive about the fact that actually Frank had a will and what his wishes were, which were not carried out. And then, you had nursed your mother and were taking care of your mother at her end, and then boom, this will comes down that basically unevenly divides the cash, which is not the main thing, really the power over the legacy. So, are you,
Yeah, I
how are
mean,
things at the moment?
basically, Gail it was Erasure by Gail, but she said, "You two, Dweezil and you, cannot have anything to do with Frank's legacy." And because she was saying that she was doing all these things in Frank's name when it was not what he asked for, I couldn't reconcile that. And ultimately, what I came to is, we all got weird ingredients, and everybody did something different with them. And I can't make somebody feel differently than they are. I can only just be open to having a heart full conversation about the stuff that's painful, and that invitation still stands. I've made a lot of progress with Amit. We recently did his podcast
Yes, I
called
saw it.
Rock Rock.
Rocktail's
We've
great.
done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I've
I was
seen a
thrilled
lot
because
of
he read the book, and I was just ecstatic about it, and he loved it. And so that was my
Well, you know,
hope.
he was younger, so he may not have, you know, realized, certainly Diva didn't. And then I just want to say that I'm speaking to you from up near Woodstock, New York, and you are going to be, I don't even know if you know this, you know, you're
Yeah.
going to be at the Golden Notebook on October 13th.
Looking
So
forward to it.
I encourage everyone to come out. This is really a fantastic book by a very, you know, fantastic, aware, emotionally aware, excellent writer, good humor. And I wish you all the best with this book. And we look forward to the next one. Oh, one last thing.
Yeah.
Have you ever had a burnt weenie sandwich?
Definitely.
Okay, there we go. The answer to
Yeah.
the
No,
question
yeah,
is.
just slice it down the middle, put butter in the pan, fry it up, and then it gets extra crispy on the inside and the outside.
Wow. There you go. Maybe that could be the next. I don't know if that would be the next business for
A
you, but
weird cookbook of things that the
if
taste
Frank,
good, but good for you.
yeah. Well, thanks so much for your time. And the book is called Earth to Moon, and it's fantastic. And there it is. Go out and get it.
Thank you so much. I hope I see you at the
Yes,
book
I
reading.
will come down. I'll be
Okay,
wearing
great.
my.
Thank you.
I'll wear this shirt. I won't embarrass myself with a Frank shirt. Bye bye.
Thanks for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
I like buy the neatest mini skirts and stuff. It's like so bitchin' because like everybody's like super, super nice. It's like so bitchin'. Like
Ventura, there he goes. She just bought some bitchin' clothes. Tosses her head and flips her hair. She got a whole bunch of nothing in there.
Anyway, he goes, "Are you into S&M?" I go, "Oh, right. Could you like just picture me in a, like a leather teddy?" "Yeah, right. Hurt me. I'm sure, no way." He was like freaking me out. He called me a beastie. That's like he's totally blitzed. He goes like, "Bag your face, I'm sure."
Valley girl, and there is no
Venus, that's okay. That's gonna be really like a total bummer. I'm freaking out, I'm sure. Like those things that like stick in your mouth are so gross. You gotta get saliva all over them. But like, I don't know, it's gonna be cool, you know. I'll buy some, like, see my smile. It'll be like really cool. Except my like teeth are like too small. But no biggie. So awesome. It's like tubular, you know. Well, I'm not like really ugly or anything. It's just like, I don't know. You know me, I'm like into the like the clean stuff, like Pac-Man, and like, I don't know, like my mother like makes me do the dishes. It's like so gross, like all the stuff like sticks to the plate, and it's like somebody else's food, you know. It's like grody to the max, I'm sure. It's like really nauseating, like barf out, gag me with a spoon, gross. I am sure. Totally.
Yeah. I don't do publicity balling for you anymore.
The first word in this song is discorporate. It means to leave your body.
Discorporate and come with me. Shifting, drifting. Sense and things then in this form.
ugliest part of your body? What's the ugliest part of your body? Some say your nose, some say your toes, but I think it's your mind.